Have you ever wondered why Steve Jobs, the iconic face of passion-driven work, didn't actually follow his own advice? In his famous 2005 Stanford commencement speech, Jobs urged graduates to find what you love and don't settle, advice that has inspired millions. Yet ironically, the young Jobs wasn't passionate about technology or entrepreneurship. He was a college dropout fascinated by Western history, dance, and Eastern mysticism who walked barefoot and scrounged meals at Hare Krishna temples. Less than a year before founding Apple, he was still spiritually conflicted, dabbling in electronics merely for quick cash. His breakthrough came not from following a pre-existing passion, but from noticing local enthusiasm for model kit computers and pitching Wozniak on selling circuit boards, a modest side venture that unexpectedly transformed into Apple Computer. This disconnect between Jobs' advice and his actual path reveals a profound truth. Follow your passion might be the most dangerous career advice of our time. With over 3 million copies sold and endorsements from figures like Daniel Pink and Reid Hoffman, this book has become a cornerstone text challenging our most fundamental assumptions about building a fulfilling career. The passion hypothesis, the belief that the key to occupational happiness is first figuring out your true passion and then finding a matching job, permeates modern career advice. Bookstore shelves overflow with titles promising to connect who you are with work you'll love. Career counselors and bloggers preach that doing what you love will lead to success. But when you examine how passionate people actually built their careers, this hypothesis quickly unravels. Consider the evidence. A study of 539 Canadian students found that while 84% had passions, less than 4% of these passions related to work. Amy Wresniewski's research revealed that employees with identical jobs were evenly split between seeing their work as just a job, a career, or a calling, with experience being the strongest predictor of viewing work as a calling. Self-determination theory identifies three psychological needs for motivation: autonomy, competence, and relatedness, none of which require pre-existing passion. The cultural obsession with follow your passion is relatively recent. Richard Bowles' 1970 publication, What Color Is Your Parachute, radically suggested people should figure out what you like to do and find a place that needs people like you. Google's Ngram viewer shows Follow Your Passion spiking in usage after 1970, then surging again after 1990. This philosophy has created unrealistic expectations, particularly among younger generations, who expect work to be not just a job, but an adventure. Yet despite this increased focus on passion, job satisfaction has steadily declined from 61% in 1987 to just 45% in 2010. The passion mindset, focusing on what work offers you rather than what you can offer through your work, creates two significant problems. First, it makes you hypersensitive to what you dislike about your job, breeding chronic unhappiness. Second, the deep questions driving this mindset, who am I and what do I truly love, are essentially impossible to answer definitively, keeping you perpetually confused and dissatisfied. Instead, adopt what I call the craftsman mindset, focusing on what value you produce rather than what value your job offers you. This output-centric philosophy emerged from Steve Martin's advice, "Be so good they can't ignore you." Martin spent 10 years refining his innovative comedy approach before achieving monster success. This approach offers clarity by focusing on what you can offer the world, while the passion mindset creates a swamp of unanswerable questions. There's something liberating about putting aside self-centered concerns about finding the perfect job and instead dedicating yourself to becoming exceptionally skilled. What makes a great job great? Examining figures like Steve Jobs, Ira Glass, and Al Merrick reveals three key traits: creativity, pushing boundaries and winning recognition; impact, changing how people live; and control, freedom over when and how to work. These traits are both rare and valuable. Basic economics tells us that to acquire something rare and valuable, you must offer something rare and valuable in return. Each successful career example demonstrates this principle. Jobs created the groundbreaking Apple II, Glass developed award-winning editing skills through years of practice, and Merrick crafted surfboards that won competitions. This leads to the career capital theory of great work. 1. The traits defining great work are rare and valuable. 2. You need rare and valuable skills to offer in return. 3. The craftsman mindset, focused on becoming so good they can't ignore you, is ideal for acquiring this career capital. While the craftsman mindset generally trumps the passion mindset, not all jobs provide a suitable foundation for building career capital. 3 disqualifiers make a job unsuitable for the craftsman approach. 1. Few opportunities to develop rare and valuable skills. 2. Work you find useless or harmful to the world. 3. Having to work with people you strongly dislike. If a job has any of these traits, it will thwart your attempts to build career capital, either because skill growth is impossible or because you won't stick around long enough to accumulate meaningful capital. Alex Berger and Mike Jackson exemplify how the craftsman mindset can lead to fantastic careers. Both focused on developing valuable skills rather than chasing passion, then leveraged their accumulated career capital to create work they love. Television writing represents a winner-take-all market where thousands of hopefuls compete with just one type of career capital, writing quality, to impress a very small group of buyers. Alex Berger's success came from his debater's mindset of continuous improvement. After moving to LA without clear goals, he strategically positioned himself to learn the industry, first at National Lampoon, then as an assistant at NBC, where he discovered what actually makes scripts successful. While working full-time, he dedicated nights to multiple writing projects, often finishing at 2 to 3 a.m. before returning to work. He moved to a script assistant position on Commander-in-Chief to observe professional writers, pitched ideas, and eventually co-wrote an episode. This first credit accelerated his career, leading to a staff writer position on K-Ville, then co-creating Glenn Martin DDS with Michael Eisner, and eventually selling his own pilot to USA. Each of Alex's career breaks required specific career capital he had methodically accumulated. His story isn't mysterious or dramatic. He simply understood the value and difficulty of becoming good. Similarly, Mike Jackson's position as a director at the Wesley Group, a cleantech venture capital firm, is extraordinarily coveted. Business school deans report that their entire graduating classes want similar roles in cleantech VC. It combines making a lot of money with helping the world, plus perks like global travel and meetings with political figures, from senators to Barack Obama's campaign manager. Yet, unlike a passion-driven narrative, Mike didn't pursue this path from a lifelong calling. After earning biology and earth systems degrees from Stanford, Mike Jackson stayed for a master's thesis that explored India's natural gas sector. This led to leading a major international research project where he gained deep expertise in global energy markets. When the project ended, Mike leveraged his rare understanding of carbon markets to start Village Green, a business helping companies achieve carbon neutrality. Through a serendipitous connection, he eventually interviewed at the Wesley Group, starting as an intern and quickly rising to director within 2 years. Mike embodied the craftsman mindset by excelling at each position, accumulating career capital without elaborate career plans. His story proves that focusing on capabilities over callings can lead to exceptional opportunities, provided you have exceptional capital to offer in exchange. Why did Jordan Tice become an exceptional guitar player while I remained average, despite us both starting at age 12? The difference wasn't hours invested, it was how those hours were used. I merely played. Jordan practiced with deliberate strain, pushing just beyond his comfort zone and providing instant self-feedback when he made mistakes. Chess provides an ideal laboratory for studying skill acquisition due to its clear ranking system. A 2005 study by Neil Charnas revealed that what separates chess grandmasters from intermediate players isn't just the 10,000 hours of practice Malcolm Gladwell popularized, it's how those hours are spent. Grandmasters dedicated 5 times more hours to serious study than intermediate players who plateaued. This deliberate practice involves carefully chosen challenging activities with immediate feedback, often guided by expert coaches. Anders Ericsson formalized this concept as deliberate practice, which research shows provides the key to excellence across diverse fields, from sports to programming. Most knowledge workers never engage in this type of systematic skill development, creating an opportunity. Those who integrate deliberate practice into their work lives can dramatically outpace their peers. Drawing from deliberate practice research and successful craftsman stories, I've constructed specific steps for applying this strategy to knowledge work. 1. Decide what capital market you're in. Career capital markets come in 2 forms, winner-take-all, where only one skill matters, and auction, offering various paths to success. Alex Berger initially mistook entertainment for an auction market, wasting a year building diverse skills before realizing only script quality mattered. 2. Identify your capital type. After identifying your market, determine which specific capital to pursue. For auction markets, seek open gates, opportunities already accessible to you. Mike Jackson leveraged his Stanford education to work with a professor on environmental policy research, acquiring valuable expertise far faster than starting from scratch elsewhere. 3. Define good. Deliberate practice requires clear goals. You must know what good means in your field. Musicians like Jordan Tice always have specific techniques to master next. Without clear definitions of success, effective deliberate practice becomes impossible. 4. Stretch and destroy. Deliberate practice demands discomfort and honest feedback. As Jeff Colvin warns, it's the opposite of enjoyable comfort. It requires intense focus that stretches you beyond your abilities. When practicing, you should feel the mental strain of your neurons reconfiguring into new patterns. 5. Be patient. Steve Martin's approach to learning banjo exemplifies the patience required for mastery. If I stay with it, then one day I will have been playing for 40 years, and anyone who sticks with something for 40 years will be pretty good at it. Acquiring valuable career capital takes time. Alex needed 2 years before his first script was produced, while Mike Jackson took 5 years to accumulate enough capital for his dream job. Ryan Voylan defied post-Ivy League convention by purchasing farmland in Granby, Massachusetts after college. His Red Fire Farm has grown into a successful organic produce operation with 1,300 CSA subscribers. The farm has developed a devoted following, tapping into the perennial fantasy of leaving the rat race to work in harmony with the land. What makes this lifestyle so appealing to outsiders? Ryan didn't follow passion into farming, he stumbled into it through entrepreneurial ventures, starting with selling wild blueberries as a child. He methodically built career capital over a decade, expanding his parents' garden, renting 10 acres in high school, studying horticulture at Cornell, and continuously learning farming techniques. What makes Red Fire's lifestyle so appealing isn't working outdoors, farming is stressful, or avoiding technology. Ryan uses Excel extensively for planning. The appeal is autonomy. Ryan and Sarah invested their extensive career capital to gain control over what they do and how they do it. This control is so powerful and essential to loving your work that it's like a dream job elixir. Control isn't just the source of Red Fire Farm's appeal, it's one of the most universally important traits you can acquire with career capital. Decades of research show control improves lives in numerous ways: better grades, sports performance, productivity, and happiness. Studies reveal control-centric businesses grow 4 times faster than counterparts, and giving autonomy to teachers not only increased their promotion rates, but reversed downward performance trends of students. Results-only work environment, RO, companies demonstrate this power dramatically, At Best Buy's headquarters, teams implementing Roe saw turnover rates plummet by up to 90%. At Gap and nonprofits embracing Roe, employees reported significantly higher happiness and engagement. The research is clear. Giving people more control over what they do and how they do it increases fulfillment. While control is essential to creating work you love, acquiring it involves navigating two dangerous traps. The first control trap warns that pursuing control without sufficient career capital is unsustainable. Jane's story illustrates this perfectly. A talented student who abandoned college to pursue an adventurous vision of circumnavigating oceans and traveling across continents without motor power. Her plan to fund this lifestyle through low-maintenance websites generating passive income quickly faltered. Without substantial skills or credentials, her various business attempts and blog projects failed to gain traction. This trap appears frequently in the lifestyle design community, which encourages followers to design their own exciting paths rather than following conventional rules. While some, like Timothy Ferris, have sufficient career capital to support their unconventional lives, many enthusiasts skip building a stable foundation. The second control trap warns that once you've acquired enough career capital to gain more control in your working life, you've become valuable enough that employers will fight your efforts to gain autonomy. Lulu Young's story demonstrates how to navigate this challenge successfully. Starting at the bottom rung as a quality assurance tester, Lulu taught herself to build Unix scripts that automated testing, saving her company time and money. This innovation earned her a promotion to senior QA engineer. With this legitimate career capital accumulated, she leveraged her value to negotiate a 30-hour work week so she could pursue a part-time philosophy degree at Tufts. Almost every time Lulu leveraged her career capital for more autonomy, she encountered resistance. Her first employer reluctantly granted her 30-hour schedule. People thought she was nuts for turning down a major promotion for an ill-defined position at a tiny startup, and her final employer tried everything to prevent her from leaving. The key challenge is determining whether resistance to your bid for control indicates you lack sufficient career capital, first control trap, or that you've become so valuable your employer wants to prevent your autonomy, second control trap. Both scenarios feel identical, but require opposite responses. Heed the resistance in the first case, ignore it in the second. Derek Sivers offers a powerful principle for navigating career control decisions. Do what people are willing to pay for. This isn't about pursuing money for its own sake, but using money as a neutral indicator of value. When deciding whether to pursue more control in your work life, seek evidence that people will pay for it, whether through direct payment, investment, or an employer's willingness to keep you on payroll. In Harvard's Northwest Science Building, 35-year-old Professor Pardis Sabeti stands out for her genuine enjoyment of life, defying the stereotype of the curmudgeonly academic workaholic. She balances serious research with volleyball games with her lab team and performing in her band Thousand Days. What distinguishes Pardis is that she's built her career around a clear and compelling mission that gives meaning to her work and energizes her life beyond the lab. As a graduate student, Pardis developed an algorithm that searches human genetic databases for signs of ongoing evolution. She uses this computational approach to identify genes that provide resistance to deadly diseases like Lassa fever, malaria, and bubonic plague. Her mission, using new technology to fight ancient diseases, has attracted significant funding from the Gates Foundation and NIH. A mission provides a unifying focus for one's career, transcending specific jobs to answer the question, "What should I do with my life?" Missions are powerful because they direct energy toward meaningful goals, maximizing impact and satisfaction. People who feel their careers truly matter find greater satisfaction and resilience in the face of hard work. Staying up late to help cure an ancient disease can be energizing rather than draining. While missions are powerful, they're also complicated to develop. They require first building career capital through mastering rare and valuable skills, as missions launched without expertise typically fail. Sarah, a former newspaper editor who quit to study cognitive science, found herself paralyzed by indecision about her research direction. Despite her intelligence, she couldn't identify a unifying mission and questioned her abilities compared to other researchers. A good career mission is like a scientific breakthrough, an innovation waiting in the adjacent possible of your field. To identify such a mission, you must first reach the cutting edge, which is the only place where these opportunities become visible. This explains why Sarah struggled. She attempted to find a mission before mastering her field. Pardis Sabeti's career path illustrates why she's skeptical about identifying one's true calling in advance. At Oxford, she developed interest in Africa and infectious diseases, her third potential field after math and medicine. Only after publishing her groundbreaking 2002 Nature paper on detecting recent positive selection in the human genome did her mission become clear, using computational genetics to combat ancient diseases. Great missions need more than just good ideas. They need to be transformed into action through systematic exploration and effective marketing. Despite having career capital and notebooks filled with potential missions, many people struggled to build careers around these missions, suggesting there's more to success than simply identifying a good mission. Kirk French's modest side project filming people's archaeological claims became his unexpected breakthrough. What began as the armchair archaeologist, where Kirk would investigate and film people's backyard discoveries for his students, led to a life-changing opportunity when the Discovery Channel sought an archaeology-based reality show. His small bet on following up curious archaeological claims transformed into his dream career popularizing archaeology. Kirk's path to television success demonstrates the power of incremental progress. Rather than making one big career bet, he took a series of small exploratory steps toward his mission of popularizing archaeology. This approach mirrors what Peter Sims describes in his book, Little Bets, where successful innovators make a methodical series of little bets to discover promising directions through rapid feedback. Similarly, Giles Boket transformed from being broke and unemployed to becoming a Ruby programming rock star whose name was recognized by programmers worldwide. His success stemmed from a mission to merge art and Ruby programming, realized through Archaeopex, an open-source AI program that writes and plays dance music. Unlike others, Giles approached his mission with a marketer's mindset, systematically studying why some ideas catch on while others fail. The key to successful mission-driven projects is what I call the law of remarkability, which requires two elements. First, the project must compel people to remark about it to others. It must be a purple cow that stands out from ordinary brown cows. Second, it must be launched in a venue that supports such remarking. Giles's Archaeopteryx succeeded because it was both inherently remarkable and launched in the open-source community where good ideas spread easily. This book opened with Thomas's story, a man who pursued his passion for Zen practice at a remote monastery, only to discover that changing his surroundings didn't change his internal struggles. 10 years later, Thomas had transformed his working life not by finding the perfect job, but by changing his approach to his existing work. After returning to banking, he focused on doing his tasks well instead of constantly comparing his job to some fantasy occupation. This focus was rewarded with rapid promotions, eventually putting him in charge of systems managing billions in assets. His work now provides the rare and valuable traits, respect, impact, and autonomy that create work you love. Thomas's transformation reveals the core message of this book. Working right trumps finding the right work. This simple but subversive idea overturns decades of passion-centered career advice. By mastering rare and valuable skills, then investing the resulting career capital wisely to gain control and mission, you can build a working life you love. The path to a compelling career requires four key steps. 1. Don't follow your passion. Instead, let passion follow you as you develop rare and valuable skills. 2. Adopt the craftsman mindset. Focus on what value you can offer the world rather than what the world offers you. Use deliberate practice, systematically stretching your abilities and seeking ruthless feedback to rapidly build career capital. 3. Gain control. Once you've accumulated sufficient career capital, invest it in gaining autonomy over what you do and how you do it. Use the law of financial viability, do what people are willing to pay for, to determine when you have enough capital to make this transition. 4. Develop a mission. The best missions are found in the adjacent possible, the region just beyond the cutting edge of your field. Once you identify a mission, use little bets to explore possibilities and generate feedback. Then apply the law of remarkability to ensure your projects compel people to spread the word. This approach has repeatedly proven effective across diverse fields, from television writing to venture capital, from organic farming to software development, from academia to entrepreneurship. By focusing on becoming so good they can't ignore you, you can create work you truly love, regardless of where you start. The book opened with Thomas's story, a man who pursued his passion for Zen practice at a remote monastery, only to discover that changing his surroundings didn't change his internal struggles. 10 years later, Thomas had transformed his working life not by finding the perfect job, but by changing his approach to his existing work. After returning to banking, he focused on doing his tasks well instead of constantly comparing his job to some fantasy occupation. This focus was rewarded with rapid promotions, eventually putting him in charge of systems managing billions in assets. His work now provides the rare and valuable traits, respect, impact, and autonomy that create work you love. Thomas's transformation reveals the core message of this book: working right trumps finding the right work. This simple but subversive idea overturns decades of passion-centered career advice. By mastering rare and valuable skills, then investing the resulting career capital wisely to gain control and mission, you can build a working life you love, a philosophy that has repeatedly proven effective. The core idea of this book is that to construct work you love, you must first build career capital by mastering rare and valuable skills, then cash in this capital for traits that define compelling careers. Mission is one such trait, but you can't skip straight to a great mission without first building expertise. The best missions are found in the adjacent possible, the region just beyond the cutting edge of your field. Once you identify a mission, use little bets to explore possibilities and generate feedback. Then apply the law of remarkability to ensure your projects compel people to spread the word and are launched in venues conducive to such remarking. By rejecting the passion hypothesis and embracing the craftsman mindset, you can create a career that provides not just satisfaction, but genuine fulfillment and meaning, becoming so good they can't ignore you.